Welcome everyone to the Damage Report Friday edition, also lockdown edition, so another first. And because it is a Friday, we do have, against all odds, Brett Ehrlich, who joins us now. How's it going, Brett Ehrlich?
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Good. Yeah.
I know, it's a brave new world, and I'm not feeling brave. I'm scared. So
it's terrifying. Yeah.
It does appear to be live. People are coming into the chat, so we are actually broadcasting. So thank you for joining me, Brett.
It's great to be here. I'm very excited. I'm not sure what's going on.
I want to let people know a bit of what they can expect. So we're going to be talking about Richard Burr and the ever-expanding list of senators who apparently cashed in on their forewarning about the coronavirus situation. We're going to be talking about that. We have compiled a list of things that we find unacceptable that have been developing recently. It's a little grab bag of awfulness. But we are then going to be balancing that out. We've got a top 10 list. So Brett and I have put together, 10 people and things being done in the pandemic that give us hope. People being nice or decent or fun. These are not like the biggest things necessarily. They're just small things that we kind of liked. And then let's see, we get to talk about GameStop. Doesn't happen very frequently on the stream, but it's coming up today. And then we do have garbage people. And my garbage people are almost always serious political things, but I've taken inspiration from Brett. Mine today is slightly less than serious.
Mine, I can't tell everyone how much we were not fully prepared for what's happening. So during my prep for this show, we were trying to figure out how to do main show. And so I robbed from my pitches from main show to do this. I'm not even sure if they made it into main show. So mine is decidedly less thought out than John's today, but we'll see.
We're going to see. Senator Richard Burr, as well as others, are under an incredible amount of scrutiny because it appears that they used their forewarning some time ago, about a month ago, about what was likely to happen with coronavirus here in the United States to sell off a massive amount of stock. Let me catch you up on the basic facts and then we have updates. Soon after he offered public assurances that the government was ready to battle the coronavirus, the powerful chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Richard Burr, sold off a significant percentage of his stocks, unloading between 628,000 and 1.72 million of his holdings on February 13th in 33 separate transactions. A week after he sold those stocks, the market began a sharp decline and has lost about 30% of his value since then, which, you know, even by my, you know, non-savvy, like, investor stuff, he saved hundreds of thousands of dollars, at the very least. And we also know that apparently NPR has obtained a secret recording from February 27th where he gave a VIP group at an exclusive social club, like a preview of what was really going on, while his public statements were still, we got this, it's all under control, you don't got to worry about it. So we've got a lot more to update you on after that. But Brett, since you're here, I talked about this a bit with Anna. What are your thoughts on Richard Burr and the others apparently cashing in?
So my read on the way that the general finance community thought about the economy before this all went down was that the general lay of the land was that, like, the big folks, Merrill Lynch and various other, like, not private wealth management firms, were already kind of nervous. Mm-hmm. They were looking around saying, hey, I'm not, I mean, I talked to one guy who was like, we have experienced 12 years of unprecedented growth. So essentially that he's been telling his clients to take a more defensive approach when it comes to, like, their stock portfolios. So to see certain individuals gently nudge their stock investment portfolio away from an aggressive stance, not a big deal. You would probably have seen that anyway. And when you start hearing little bits of whispers about coronavirus saying, this might disrupt some element of the supply chain, but Wuhan's far away from folks, we'll adjust a little bit. But Richard Burr does not have that defense.
Yeah.
Burr essentially said, he told a private group of well-connected people, I have insider information that says that this will have a bigger effect than what I then am representing to the general public about how they should react to things. And if you look at leaders, certain leaders do that anyway. Like, your parents when you were a kid looked at you and said, listen, everything's fine, when maybe it wasn't fine. Maybe they were worried about financial situations that your family was having, but they told you there still is a Santa Claus and there still will be a Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
But then to see him go and liquidate much of his stocks and utterly change his position to in the proportion that we're looking at, which is like almost half of his money, which is
mm-hmm.
which is insane. At that point, he is self-incriminated, and this is not acceptable, and this should not stand. And what's frustrating is that there's a lot of people out there who are looking for leadership in this time.
Yeah,
like Trump's approval rating is at 55% in specifically in relation to how he's handling the crisis, right? But so people want to support you. Richard Burr will have some kind of bump and insulation from this because everyone is just looking for leadership in this time, but we shouldn't give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like Richard Burr yeah. did something absolutely terrible, and so did all his cronies who made these moves.
Yeah, and let's note that it wasn't just him. I want to give details on some of the others. By the way, I am seeing your super chats. Thank you, everybody at home. I saw John T. Your support vibes are very much appreciated. And Nathan, thank you for your message as well. So Richard Burr was the first public, I think it was ProPublica, and one other organization had the big expose on him initially, but he wasn't the only one. So Richard Burr also apparently dumped Jim Inhofe dumped a bunch. He says it's a more complicated story, but he did. Dianne Feinstein dropped a lot of stock. Now, supposedly, I'm reading reports that stock was at a 52-week low at that point, which might have triggered the sell-off, because it later bounced back for a couple of weeks, and then the market went under. It wasn't potentially quite the same thing, but who knows? I personally think that we should be looking into all of their stock sales over the course of the past, like, 6 or 8 weeks. But I did want to let you know that there is a lot of pressure coming in across the political spectrum for Richard Burr to come clean. And I want to show you one example of that I did not expect I would have to hear is Tucker Carlson.
So you may have seen the news reports this afternoon. The chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee sold more than $1 million in stock in mid-February after learning how devastating the Chinese coronavirus could be. He had inside information about what could happen to our country, which is now happening, but he didn't warn the public. He didn't give a primetime address. He didn't go on television to sound the alarm. He didn't even disavow an op-ed he'd written just 10 days before claiming America was, quote, better prepared than ever for coronavirus. He didn't do any of those things. Instead, what did he do? He dumped his shares in hotel stocks so he wouldn't lose money. And then he stayed silent. Now, maybe there's an honest explanation for what he did. If there is, he should share it with the rest of us immediately. Otherwise, he must resign from the Senate and face prosecution for insider trading. There is no greater moral crime than betraying your country in a time of crisis. And that appears to be what happened. We'll have more on the story tomorrow.
So basically, it was Tucker Carlson saying it appears that he betrayed his country in a time of crisis. He needs to come clean. He implied that he should potentially resign. Now, that's good. And you wouldn't expect someone at Fox to be doing that necessarily. But he's using his this is important voice where it feels crafted and purposeful. But anyway, it's not just him. Let's just briefly go to someone I generally agree a little bit more with. And that is AOC, who said, as Intel chairman, Senator Burr got private briefings about coronavirus weeks ago. Burr knew how bad it would be. He told the truth to his wealthy donors while assuring the public that we were fine. Then he sold off $1.6 million in stock before the fall. He needs to resign. It's and by the way, we've been alluding to others. Senator Loeffler is another. She said it's stomach churning that the first thoughts these senators had to a dire and classified COVID briefing was how to profit off this crisis. They didn't mobilize to help families or prep response. They dumped stock. Senator Loeffler needs to resign as well. And so what do you think about Tucker Carlson and AOC pushing for something? Is that a harbinger of the end times, or have we reached a new level of unity in America?
I mean, on the one hand, it underscores a more populist approach to politics in America. That's something that Tucker goes for performatively and that AOC goes for genuinely. It is amazing to see Tucker Carlson, foppish Swanson broth Tucker Carlson, try to angle for populism. Another thing he did on a show yesterday was talk about how this will expose. And it's actually also similarly how you pitch it. It's also kind of strangely interesting the way he was pitching the way this will expose the sham of higher education, how people, all these institutions of higher learning are saying that you can stay home but still charging you rent for your tuition and room and board while this is happening. But that's it. It does expose like this undercurrent of populism in America. But I do want to focus on everything, on one specific thing. We're going to, it's like the way Silicon Valley handles things. It's like the way that politicians also have kind of embraced handling things. When they mess up early, we should remember it. And not every time they might mess up. They might have made choices that were essentially like triage based, looking at what would affect people most at the beginning. And then toward the end, you might see like larger implications that they weren't quite equipped to handle, and maybe they handled it wrong. But in this situation, the way he triaged things, we need to remember.
Yeah.
He looked at it. He's like, I have new information. If it were a hospital and people came in, it would be like, let's handle the most vulnerable first.
Yeah.
He did the opposite of that. He handled himself first. That's like and that's not okay, because this isn't a life and death situation. This is his stock margins. Mm-hmm. This is his portfolio. This is him going on like probably calling someone who's telling him, you know, I don't have, who probably themselves doesn't even have that information, and him saying, listen, we need to do this now.
Yeah.
And then we'll handle people. And that's unforgivable, and we should all remember it. And I agree with everyone that's saying that he should suffer the consequences for it.
Yeah, and well, they had to be dragged to the position of, let's do something for regular people as well. Should our elected representatives own stock at all? I think that's an interesting question that a lot of people have been raising. It's been raised before, but in particularly in light of all of these different senators apparently like using the information they'd got in classified briefings to, you know, cash out. A lot of people are saying that they should not. We mentioned the AOC things that they shouldn't. I saw a poll, by the way, it's from Data for Progress. Liberals support banning members of Congress from owning individual stocks by a 56% to 20% margin, while conservatives support the same thing by a 53 to 28% margin. So plus 36 for liberals, plus 25 for conservatives. That's pretty broad consensus that they should not necessarily have the stocks, because of course they have information before other people do, and they can make decisions in office that are going to influence the stocks that they have. It seems like such an obvious opening for widespread and extensive corruption.
Well, there's various ways you can own stocks, but not be able to act on individual bits of information. So, and that's something that folks criticized Trump for when he took office, which is put it all in a blind trust. Don't have control over it. It's fine. It's better. It's not completely 100% great, but it's better for the people who represent individuals to have a personal stake holistically in things that affect individuals. The stock market does affect individuals, the general health of it. I mean, when we say the Dow, we are talking about like a collection of stocks that generally represent the entire market. Mm. When you see Trump go out and say, it's Floquaxitrin is the new drug. He's giving information he had before about a specific drug whose pharmaceutical company developer will have a spike in an individual share amount.
Well, it did instantly.
And it did instantly.
That's, I don't know if it lasted, but it did.
Well, on our morning meeting, it was like, why is he doing that? And the answer is because he's saying, go buy these stocks.
Yeah.
Go buy us some stocks. But
I get the reference. I see what you're doing there.
Thank you. Great experiment begin. But you can also, as if we force them to be somewhat invested generally in the stock market, because a lot of union pensions are pegged to the performance of the stock market, and representatives should be concerned with that.
Yeah,
they should be able to own stocks, but not make these kind of plays where suddenly this guy's doing that. And they shouldn't. And they should lock in the percentage of their investment in the stock market as they take office in a way that is generally responsible.
Yeah.
If they're able to say, like, let's be more aggressive or less aggressive, then they could be acting, you know, like throughout their tenure, they could be acting on their insider information, how it would affect the market holistically. But one of the criticisms, and I think it was like Fareed Zakaria who originally was talking about this, about the over-financialization of the economy in general, we are starting to focus more and more on the stock market, on shareholders, as opposed to workers. You could look at like the airline industry and every decision they made since 9/11 and since the bailout of 2008 was to benefit the shareholders and the executives and not the workers. The profits went way up. The workers' share of those profits stayed about the same.
Yeah.
And that's not okay. And we need to dissuade the people who represent us from not representing us and rather representing themselves.
I agree. Look, I think some sort of effort like this is one part of that. I personally think that, you know, an overall approach, a multi-pronged approach that gets us away from the obvious implicit belief that public service is a way to enrich yourself in the short term or in the long term, whether it's, you know, helping yourself to information that could potentially inform your investments while you're in office or helping you out and getting some sort of lobbying position after office. I think that we will be much better off if we close down as much of that as possible. But really fast, we don't have much more time on this because there's a lot I want to get to, but I feel like we should at least read a little bit of the responses from some of these senators who are saying that they totally shouldn't have to resign, and they probably are opposed to being sent to prison as well. Here's the first, is from Richard Burr. He says, I relied solely on public news reports to guide my decision regarding the sale of stocks on February 13th. Specifically, I closely followed CNBC's Daily Health and Science reporting. It's Asia bureaus at the time. Understanding the assumption many could make in hindsight, however, I spoke this morning with the chairman of the Senate Ethics Committee and asked him to open a complete review of the matter with full transparency. So he's taking it seriously. Kelly Loeffler said, this is a ridiculous and baseless attack. I do not make investment decisions for my portfolio. Investment decisions are made by multiple third-party advisors without my or my husband's knowledge or involvement. And she goes on to say, as confirmed in the periodic transaction report to Senate Ethics, I was informed of these purchases and sales on February 16th, 3 weeks after they were made. And really fast on that, so she uploaded part of an image, supposedly of the date that she was informed of that. And I think there were two interesting things in that. One is that just because she was informed via that document, that I don't believe means that there was no other way that she could have been informed.
It depends. When you have those kinds of investments, you can opt for automatic notifications of it. Typically, though, they are delivered. Well, probably what's happening is she has a general investment in the stock market and she gets periodic reports.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was that John Oliver piece that talked about, like, there are thousands and thousands of transactions that private wealth managers make on behalf of their clients that you sign off on just by clicking something in a window or saying something verbally over the phone. I don't doubt that. I mean, that's the kind of thing that was happening. But I'm glad we can launch a Senate ethics investigation. And at the very least, when she says this is like a baseless attack, it gives you a read of how people are feeling about their elected representatives and the suspicion that they have about it, which has been underscored by countless polls since forever, kind of.
Yeah. It just seems like, I guess there are people who are rich enough, but you have to be quite rich for your money manager, or whoever, to sell off like more than $1 million in stock and you don't find out about it for weeks.
I mean, the answer
like, you don't
is
even
no.
know
the
that.
Answer to that is not true.
Yeah.
The reason for having private wealth managers is so that you tell them aggressive, risk averse, or middle of the road.
Yeah.
And then they make their decisions because of it.
I guess.
And the reason for that is that when you have a private wealth manager, you say, I want to maintain this amount of wealth. And are we riding the stock market? Or are we not? And you get reports about how much you have, and that itself, the amount of money you totally have, is divided based on how you want to invest aggressively or non-aggressively. If you want to invest aggressively, you say, I want this, like 80% of the pie.
No, I get what you're saying. I'm just saying I don't trust her. I don't think that they all did this all on the same set of days randomly.
That's how it works, though, John. Like, that's how it works, is they all...
For all of these different senators?
Merrill Lynch.
No, I'm saying that they all sold off in the same, like, short little period of days.
Well, independently. We would have to go down the paper trail. But the answer is kind of.
Okay.
Kind of. That's how it works.
Let me just, we got to move on. But the last bit that I learned from that little document she uploaded was it showed some of her individual sales, and she sold off between $50,000 and $100,000 of Funko stock, which I just thought was kind of interesting.
It's not her.
I know I guess I understand
it's
that.
It's an algorithm. And that's why they have those like seven, I hate.
Algorithms are people, my friend.
Algorithms are people, but like, so much of it is automated that like it triggers sales, and what we should be more concerned about is like there are four financial firms who, whether they were nervous or not, say, "Hey, everybody! At the same time, we're going to sell everything off,"
mm-hmm.
and then that exacerbates a problem that mm-hmm. didn't have to be as big. Like that's something I'm worried about.
Yeah. Well, like I got one extra takeaway. We got to look at Brett Ehrlich's stock transactions. Obviously, there's a lot in this pandemic that is unacceptable, the fact that it got to this point. But there are also a few little things that I've noticed that popped up in the past 24 hours that I have an issue with. And so why don't we go through a few of these and Brett and I will respond. Brett, you ready for some of this?
Sure.
Okay, so here's the first. This is going to be Donald Trump. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the federal government right now to make sure that things like not only the testing kits, but also, you know, personal protective equipment, the PPEs, the masks, but also respirators and things like that. We have to get these out to states that need them because we are on the verge of a major crisis in that. Now, here is his response to people saying the federal government needs to step up and do that.
Governors are supposed to be doing a lot of this work, and they are doing a lot of this work. The federal government's not supposed to be out there buying vast amounts of items and then shipping. You know, we're not a shipping clerk.
He said governors are supposed to be doing a lot of this. We're not a shipping clerk. We're not supposed to be buying things and shipping it out. Okay. It's a crisis, and people are going to die if they don't have that stuff. It's not like we're asking him to send like board games and peanut butter. Like we need this equipment to make sure. Like that's the whole thing that we're doing right now is trying to make sure that it doesn't get worse.
I mean, if only there. That's insane. Because like, if you use the mail to commit a crime, suddenly it's like federal mail fraud. Like we have a federal shipping system. And it's not Federal Express. It's the post office. Like, and I get it. It is this general undercurrent of like conservative political person who is like, I don't want to have a job. I don't want to have to do anything. Mm-hmm. Like how convenient it is that to have the position of a conservative federal employee is that you're like, this job shouldn't even exist. I mean, I have it and I'll take it and I'll use it and I'll take the income from it. But ideally you handle it on your own. I mean, unless it's like reproductive rights and then it's all me, bro.
Yeah. It's just like, it's, what is it? March 20th? It's the 20th. Yeah. He still doesn't get it. Most
still
of them don't.
Get it.
Still,
this is an emergency.
They don't. It's an emergency. So I saw a tweet from Mark Levine, chair of New York City Council Health Committee, who said they need 3 million N95 masks, 50 million surgical masks, 15,000 ventilators, 25 million each of surgical gowns, coveralls, gloves, and other face masks. And he finished by saying, "We make none of these things in New York City. We need the federal government to mobilize production immediately." But they're not shipping clerks, so I guess New York City is on its own?
Just do it. Just do it. That's what it is. I mean, everybody has a version of this problem right now. Everyone is looking around and saying, this is not normal. I have needs that I need to fulfill. And then they figure out a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that dude.
Yeah.
Just make it happen.
And the thing is, like so I'm going to refine this thinking into what I hope will be a pithy tweet. But like, when necessary, when it's a crisis, our government can crank out like M1 Abrams tanks, but not N95 masks. Or doesn't think that it's our job. Like, man, we really need tanks if we're going to take down the Nazis. But it's really on the governors to do that. Like, you know, we're not arms manufacturers. Like, they got to do it. Like, nobody thinks that the government would have that approach if it was a different sort of enemy.
An interesting just factoid is Skip who is one of our TDs on the in the studio, is from Bethlehem, around Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And the factory that his dad worked in is named after, like, the factory has different buildings, I think, kind of how he's named it, which are named after the things they made in the war effort.
Oh, yeah.
So there's, like, the tank plant and the shells plant. And I think his dad worked in the shells plant. Or and so, yeah, they can take it over for that reason. Mm-hmm. But, like, and in that situation, the federal government is the solution for everything. Oh, only the federal government can do it. But in this situation, nah. And I get it. You have to delegate certain things. But, man, just solve the problem. Solve the problem.
Yeah. Frustrating. We find it to be unacceptable. Here's another thing I find to be unacceptable. You see this article going around? It's a woman. Total cost of her COVID-19 treatment, $34,927.43 for testing and treatment. And the woman is quoted saying, "I was pretty sticker shocked. I personally don't know anybody who has that kind of money." Yeah, I don't either. $34,000. For something that you should never have been exposed to. It was a failure of our government that led to you getting it, and now you have to pay, like, you know, an average yearly salary for an American worker or more. You don't have the money. You simply don't.
Yeah, and all these things would be solved if we had universal health care. Like, that's what's so wildly frustrating, is we could have sat down long ago, and many people were pitching it long ago, a baseline for this. In other countries, they have the problem of overrun hospitals in Italy, but they don't have the problem of, if you survive it, you're dead financially.
Exactly. Yeah, that if you manage to get past this crisis, we're going to have another one for you coming up right behind it. Let's go. I took off my glasses because I realized those really annoying shadows are still coming through. I forgot to do that in advance of the show. So
gorgeous.
Thank you. I'm trying. Let's go to we got two more things we found unacceptable. One is this. This is an article. Coronavirus and poverty. A mother skips meals so her children can eat. And so that article focuses on one. But how many families are going to experience that? Because again, like, okay, maybe the checks come through, maybe they get here in a few weeks or in a month, and people get $1,000, or maybe if they have kids, maybe they get $1,500 or $2,000. Okay, maybe that pays for their rent, but they still have to pay for their insurance, their car, all their utilities. Like, food could still end up being incredibly, and this is for a family that hypothetically has some money, it could still be difficult. Like, for people who are right now homeless, out of work, those sorts of things. It's going to be absolutely devastating. And, like, we have the money. If we really wanted to, we could make sure that everyone has access to food. They could set up food banks, you know, throughout the country, have the National Guard stock them and those sorts of things. And it might end up coming to that. But right now, that's not part of the conversation that I'm hearing.
Yeah. And also, like, this happened before coronavirus. This was a thing across America before coronavirus.
Totally. Where
families, I mean, a tale as old as, you know, time is... I gave up my meals so you could eat.
Yeah.
And then add coronavirus to it. You're multiplying as the unemployment rate spikes, as we take care of corporations and not their workers. More and more families having to do this while we are bombarded with tone deaf Ivanka Trump Instagram stories of, like, does it get hard during coronavirus time? Maybe you can make a tent and pretend you're homeless in your own house. To keep the kids from playing too much Nintendo. Have you seen my new dog?
Oh my god. I'll take a photo of the dog. I'll take that.
The dog's terrifying, dude. The dog is terrifying. Her dog is a devil dog.
Yeah? Okay, I haven't actually looked. You're going to be shocked to find out I don't follow Ivanka Trump on Instagram.
It's the Melania Trump of dogs, which is weird. She should hate her mother.
Just, it's very unhappy. Okay, let's go to one more thing. Also unacceptable. I found this earlier. This is on eBay. Angel Soft toilet paper, 12 family rolls, fast shipping, which you would expect if you're paying $50,766.66.
Jeez.
It's $15 for expedited shipping, to be fair. And I think there were 86 bids on that. Now, look, obviously those, it's not a real auction. Well, it's real, but they're not expecting to get it. And the bids aren't real either. And obviously it's not that dire, but... Like, it's still, it's prices are jacked up. There is price gouging going on. In some places, things like that, not just toilet paper, but other essentials are not available at all. And if you want them to be sold by an individual, that individual is going to jack up the price 5 to 20 times for you.
Yeah, my favorite meme of the toilet paper crisis and everyone being like, I gotta have my own toilet paper, is 10 years of The Walking Dead and never once did I see them fight over toilet paper.
That's a good point. Yeah, there's so many essentials that they didn't have access to, but they seem to make it through. And so those are just a few of the things. Like the reason I wanted to put together this segment is there's so many of these every day that we can't do individual videos about every one of them. But these are the sorts of things that we need to fight back, whether it's complacency in our elected officials, whether it's, you know, price gouging and hoarding, leaving vulnerable people behind. Leaving people potentially with bankruptcy following this crisis as a result of it. These are the sorts of things that I think we need to be on the lookout for. As of last night, it was announced that not just for Los Angeles, but also across California, we are now officially on lockdown. Here at the Damage Report, we had effectively been on lockdown, sort of as a test run for our own personal safety, but now it is effectively mandated. There's effectively like a shelter in order place, except for essential businesses, travel to get groceries, pharmaceuticals, things like that. Most people are supposed to stay home. That is going to last for a number of weeks, and of course, it could be extended beyond that. We wanted to go to another expert on living in California, so Brett Ehrlich, you're here. You've lived in California for a long time. What do you think about this?
My entire life.
Yeah. It's official.
What do I think about living on lockdown in California?
Well, how are you responding? Like we've seen it happen in some other states, and we sort of expected that it would happen here, but now it is official. For at least, you know, a good month, you're going to be spending basically all of your time at home with your wife.
Ugh, God help her. We've already had to negotiate like what it's like to be around people, to be around each other, mm-hmm. instead of sending me off for most of the day. So I have to actively, the kind of energy that happens at the office, I have to try to curtail. The thing working against us in this situation is that I am freaking out the entire time because I still haven't figured out how to broadcast today's main show functionally, given that I have now, it was a last minute thing. We were planning on doing another in-studio cruise day today and then having the entire weekend to figure it out. Last night, Mike Sheckles and Johnny Greenwald, or Mike Sheckles, my wife and I were actually like Skyping a fake version of the show. And as we were, as we had everything figured out and tried to stream it to like a dummy account, it just was like, oh, we can do everything but stream. And then we tried loading like new drivers. And then now I have two monitors that don't work.
Yeah.
Ugh. So it might be this, my wife's computer, we end up streaming on.
We're going to figure that. I mean, look, I think I could maybe help a little bit in that. But we're going to figure that out. What do you think about, you know, like, conceivably the supply chain will continue. You'll have access to things. It's a huge change. Like, we've never experienced anything like this.
I think they will still keep people on the road driving things up and down. I think there have been very, very nice things that people have done to themselves on like a small business scale, keep hope alive and keep things going. I know that like my local restaurant has changed from a restaurant into a general store. So they are actually essentially like they put all the chairs on top of the tables and you can walk in and they have taken the hand soap that they get still delivered and they've put it into little containers and it's like $4. Mm-hmm. And then they're selling like meat, like that would be used in a dinner, and vegetables that they get brought in. The upside that California has is that we do have like a big agricultural industry.
Yeah.
That hopefully there's still industries that you can foresee still happening as long as you can ship things. That's really it. And so we'll see what is allowed, what is considered to be like an essential industry. I think that shipping will be, and I think that like harvesting will be, and I think that Netflix will be. I don't know. How about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess I'm a bit of a homebody anyway, so that makes it a little bit easier, but it's different not going into work, you know, a lot like the majority of people probably can't work from home, but even a lot who can work from home, it's not necessarily the same thing. It's a different routine. You know, and if you are, let's say hypothetically that your business doesn't shut down, you're just furloughed effectively until this thing is over. Like, for a lot of people, you draw a lot of who you are from your job, or your career. And having that even temporarily shut down, in addition to worrying about your own health and the health of your family and friends, that's just a lot to process all at the same time.
Yeah, I was talking to Jesus Godoy as we were, you know, OG TYT, as we were packing everything up on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And he was like, this is going to be so weird. He said since he was 17, he's had to go to work.
Yeah,
every day. And he's like, it's just weird. You could see it on his face. Like, he's going to be fine. He's at home with his family. He's responding to, like, texts and stuff when we're trying to, like, logistically handle things. But that's it. And you see that, like, you know, like, death of a salesman, like, yeah. All the people who are out of a job. And, you know, you might look at this as general stereotypes. You might think that it's, you know, the outcropping of capitalism and an American approach to it, where people here live to work instead of working to live, and vice versa. But so much of your identity is absolutely caught up in that.
Yeah.
And not to mention, so you have, like, your identity that suffers, but a lot of folks won't even have time to handle that. They'll have to figure out how to put food on the table, where to get that food from, and how to afford it.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, one of the reasons later on the show we're going to be talking about, like, some of the things that give us hope is that, like, I really just hope that there's some things that have to continue, like, you know, therapy. Like, people need therapy. They need an attachment to other people. Like, thankfully, you know, streaming entertainment and stuff like that is very prevalent, so it's going to be relatively easy to keep yourself at least distracted. I personally think, you know, what would be a great idea is, and maybe this exists, like, the federal government should subsidize, like online classes to anyone that wants to take them or whatever. Like, if you're going to be on lockdown for multiple months and you want to take some sort of course, they should subsidize that to make it, you know, it not only fills the time, but also makes it a little bit productive for some people. That's just one example. But I think that that's sort of, those sorts of things could definitely help.
On the up, I think they should subsidize internet, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because all and those strengthen things are it. Available. Well, all those things are available.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You're talking about like the Harvard online classes or something like that?
Yeah, you can audit classes. You can just, I mean, everything that you could potentially learn,
yeah,
is learnable online. I would trust, like, an open, I mean, we shouldn't rely on it, but, like, a trusted community of people to put together a bunch of places to go to learn certain things. And the YouTube video tutorials are absolutely available, but all the things that, all the means by which we will keep our minds active and engaged are mostly online.
Yeah.
And so I think they should give some kind of subsidy for that. And if they focus on a universal basic income, maybe they can, I mean, I don't want them to subsidize the industries. I haven't really thought that through, but some way that they can make it so that people don't go nuts.
Yeah. I think like free national lynda.com accounts.
That's what we need. I don't even know what that is. What's lynda.com?
Linda, you can take online classes for, like, tech stuff, programs, like, camera work, writing.
Who's Linda, John? Who's this Linda?
Okay. You know how we're going to get through this, Brett? With each other. We're going to lose it. We are in dark times. There's a lot of bad news on a daily basis, but that does not mean that there are not good things happening. And so, Brett Ehrlich and I wanted to bring you 10 things that people are doing that give us hope in the middle of what's looking more and more like a global lockdown. And so we've got 5 each. We're going to go back and forth. We didn't plan this out in advance. Brett, would you like to go first?
Sure, why not?
Okay, what do you got?
In these trying times, there is a run on a lot of stuff. I have 2 of mine are about medical masks. But the first one is, this is very, you know, inside entertainment industry, but this show's The Good Doctor, Station 19, and Fox's The Resident. Since there is a shortage of masks, they have all decided to donate the prop masks that they use on the show to the medical professionals who might need them.
The prop masks are actual working masks.
Yeah, it was probably just easier to buy actual masks than get. I don't think a prop house is like, you know, what we should make is actually super realistic masks. So they just went out and buy them. Yeah, Grey's Anatomy, Station 19. At Station 19, we're lucky enough to have about 300 of the coveted N95 masks, which we donated to our local fire station. They're tremendously grateful, says Grey's Anatomy's, I forget, like someone who works on the show.
That's very nice of them. That's great. I mean, we're going to need a lot of masks. Oh my God. I was reading some numbers for the worldwide consumption each day, and it's like tens of millions of masks consumed each day. But everybody helping out, and you know, hopefully more and more places will be manufacturing them. I might have a little bit on that a little bit later on. For mine, we're going to have to go to a video, Brett. So you should be able to just watch this. I don't think you need to hear it, Brett. But in Spain, there was an individual who wanted to make sure that people who were on lockdown still got exercise. So this, I think he's a trainer. He went up on his roof and started doing exercises that other people, like in the windows of neighboring buildings, started following along on. Here's a little bit of the video. So they're getting their squats in, everybody doing jumping jacks and everything. I like that. That could become like a routine. Like, we can still interact with each other, just everybody stay, you know, far away. I like that.
It's great. I like this more than I like the people playing music out their windows.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's
more interactive.
It's more interactive. It's an opt-in model. It's mm-hmm. visual largely. I mm-hmm. don't like people being like, hey, like these. Out the window. Hey, everybody, I'm going to play some music you might or might not like. I don't care. if that's cool with you, we play some oldies. don't like that so much, but I absolutely do approve of this. I have some friends who are like posting their family yoga sessions or whatever they're doing to stay fit.
I was thinking that mirror thing, you know, you've probably seen the ads for. I bet that's going to sell.
Oh, the mirror that turns on? Yeah,
the mirror that you do the exercises in or whatever?
Yeah, exactly. In the future, when that's feasible, that's one of those things that I see and I'm like, that's literally from Total Recall. We need to not be at that point yet because I'm...
Yeah, or Demolition Man.
Move to Mars. Yeah.
Yeah. What's your next one?
All right, so my next one is this amazing story about medical masks. It ends well, but essentially in the Ukraine, there were a bunch of guys who had 100,000 medical masks. I just like this story because there's some crazy stories that you get to read that end up on a good note, but along the way they're just so batty that you can't help but enjoy them and share them with your friends. So this story is from the Independent. Coronavirus. Armed robbers arrested after an attempt to steal 100,000 face masks in Ukraine.
Oh my God.
So essentially a group wanted to sell some five guys wanted to sell 100,000 medical masks to black marketeers. And when the black marketeers showed up, they actually pretended to be police and used guns to steal the 100,000 masks for free so that they themselves could sell them. And then, so these guys who originally were going to fence these goods to the black marketeers / armed robbers then decided, you know what I need to do is call the police. So the police actually intervened and arrested the armed robbers. And the best bit about this, and as I say, it's just like those things that you get to watch and you're like, this is insane. Essentially, they have you can watch the Ukrainian video of the bust. Mm-hmm. And in that bust, you absolutely see what looks like the kind of scene of confiscating drugs. It's all these like packaged goods. And when they open them, you expect to see like heroin fall out and marijuana fall out. But no, the police open the contraband and it's just 100,000 medical masks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You find out later that those cops are actually CIA. They were stealing it, too. That's a good story, though. I like that. Yeah. Interesting. You know, the other side of that is that people are trying to steal masks to resell. But yes, I get that the ending is not bad.
Okay, the government now has 100,000 medical masks.
Exactly.
Now.
That is good. Make use of it. Okay, my next one is going to be, I'm going to mention, it's Bernie Sanders that did that. So Bernie Sanders sent out a campaign email asking for donations, but not for his campaign. Instead, the ad was, or the email was asking for you to split a $5 donation between five charities: Meals on Wheels, No Kid Hungry, Restaurant Workers Community Foundation, COVID-19 Emergency Relief Fund, National Domestic Workers Alliance, and One Fair Wage Emergency Fund, which is like aid for service workers, basically. And so he's using his massive email list, not in this case to raise money for himself and his campaign, but for all of these different charities that more and more people are going to be relying on, which I think is a great use of his email network.
Awesome. Someone using fundraising apparatuses for good.
Instead of evil for once.
Instead of absolute evil. This is one of those things that, like, if you think about it too much, you get really sad. But in the meantime, Phil Knight, Giorgio Armani, and 17 Italian billionaires are donating more than $28 million to fight coronavirus in Italy. People like Giorgio Armani, Remo Ruffini, who's the chairman and CEO of the luxury sportswear brand Moncler, has contributed $10.9 million. The Benetton family's investment arm, like all these people who along the way have probably used like child labor and weird ways of making money, are actually giving back. And I know we shouldn't have to rely on billionaires to do it, but at least in these times, they're not keeping all the money for themselves. There are a bunch of people who are actually deciding to do well. Not just that, but also Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds gave $1 million to Canadian and American food banks.
I saw that.
And Eric Stone Street from Cam from Modern Family donated a bunch of meals, like 200,000 meals, to their hometown's food bank.
Oh, that's awesome.
So people are doing nice things.
That's nice. Can I just, I want to briefly mention, I don't want to get into a huge, I mean, it could have been a huge conversation, but like, you know, like the celebrity singing Imagine or whatever, where it's like tone deaf.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't put that in.
No, I get what you're saying. Like, okay, that is not the best thing in the world, but it's also not the worst thing in the world. Like, people were attacking them so much. And it's like, here, I understand. I'm very online. We're all very online and we're immune to that sort of thing. But some regular people are like suddenly going to be shut in and they're not used to being very online and they do like those celebrities and maybe they would like to see them singing. I don't know. Like, it's not for me, but that doesn't mean it's not for anybody.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. My next one is going to be actually here in LA. Nancy Silverton, who's a chef and the owner of Mozza, who was actually on last night's premiere episode of Top Chef, she's turned her restaurant complex into a temporary relief center for restaurant industry professionals who've been laid off or, you know, temporarily furloughed, offering them things like food. They prepare hundreds of meals each day, and then things like diapers, Tylenol, toilet paper, those sorts of things for people in the service industry. So I kind of like this. This is a very well-known, famous chef who's using her resources to help out other people in that same industry that are not doing so well. So I like that.
Yeah.
And of course, Jose Andres is also using his restaurants to feed people. That sort of goes without saying. So, but right. Yes.
And similarly, all the people who are still patronizing their local restaurants.
Yeah.
If you can, that is a good way to keep it going and to keep people employed. And to all the restaurants that are using the tips that go to the people who are preparing the foods to still pay the servers and bartenders and wait staff that are not able to come to work because they're not there.
Yeah.
Okay. This one is the Venice canals are clean. It's another thing that's like everyone's mom sending this around. Hey, did you know that like in Italy, when everyone's on lockdown, and my cousin she lives in Phoenix, and I saw on her Instagram feed that like there's like more wildlife active because there are fewer people out. Kind of part of this is so the Venice canals, someone was posting photos in the Venice canals, you could see the bottom and it just looks like they show the before and after, and you can see like fish going around because there's no people polluting everything.
Yeah.
It is kind of like when you break up with an ex and you see that they're totally fine and actually healthier after. And you're like, was I ruining everything? But still, it is nice
dirty.
To see it. Yeah. And when I was driving to work, I could see like the mountains, and I don't know if it was because it was a particularly like post-rain clear day, or because there's not as many people on the road spewing petroleum pollution into the air. But, you know, it gives folks time to see something cleaner and nature bounce back a little bit, but also, like, hopefully take time to appreciate it.
Yeah, I saw someone, like, about, they had photos, like, video of a dolphin where normally you don't see dolphins. Yeah, and, I've been seeing all the people sharing the air pollution measures, like, in LA are, like, really good. That is a gray lining that we're pointing out. It's not a justification. I don't know how it would be, but it's just, you know, it is interesting to see our effect. And also that, hypothetically, like, we could get that same effect by converting over cars, businesses, those sorts of things. Like, we can reach that at some point, hopefully without a pandemic being necessary. Okay, my number two is going to be, this is sort of a weird one, but this is like my shout out to gamers in gamer life. So Razer, the company, they make, So they make my mouse, you can't see it, and my mouse pad and other stuff too. Also, yeah, and so they make all that stuff. They are donating 1 million masks. A lot of this is about masks, really. And also converting over some of their manufacturing to make more masks. Right now, masks in general are being sold for 6 or 7 times what they were before the start of the pandemic. And I think that this is, both the charity is good, but also if more companies start to convert over their facilities to making these, if that's a possibility, then that is going to be very helpful. It'll help keep them in business and provide, you know, our frontline, the people who are on the front lines of this thing with the protective equipment that they need. So I like that. Good job, nice. Gamers.
My number one thing that made me like fell a little bit was that grocers in one I saw was in Padstow, but it was also all over the place. There's companies that, because it seems, and I know you might have seen like some random or a few stories saying that it's not exactly just the elderly population that suffers from this, but they're opening grocery stores early for elderly patrons so that folks with more fragile immune systems can get in there right after they've cleaned everything, get their shopping done, get out, and then all the younger folks come in. So they set aside half an hour every day solely for shoppers who were born 1950 or before.
Oh, wow. So yeah, that's awesome.
And that stuff, it's just like, hey, back up. It's time for grandma and grandpa to come in and get some ZD.
I would be totally fine for the next month, that being like standard practice, the first hour, 90 minutes or whatever, both because they need to be in there when we're not, and also they need the stuff more. So like, if there's a rush every morning to get certain things, let the old folks get it first, honestly. Like, we're gonna be okay. I like that. That's good. There's a little bit of that in my number one, which is, it's several things coming from, there was an article about what they're doing in Germany, like how the community is coming together. There were a few different things there. So one was, there's a hashtag that I'm going to try to pronounce, Nachbarschaftschallenge, neighborhood challenge. Social media users in Germany are calling on people to help shop or do other tasks for people nearby who are elderly or have compromised immune systems. There's a group of school children in Austria who've launched an initiative on Instagram and Twitter in which they offer to go grocery shopping for those sorts of people. And there's a website, it's in German, but it's Against the Virus, offers a free poster in several languages that people can download and hang up in their apartment building where neighbors can let each other know who is available to help. So some of these others were like, you know, these relatively wealthy individuals and corporations helping, but like regular people being willing to volunteer for Meals on Wheels or just go shopping for an individual. Like, I saw there were cards that you could print out and say what services you're willing to provide that you could leave like on people's doors or whatever, and hopefully they'll disinfect and then look at. And so I like that we're coming together. I think that we're going to need to do that. And it's also going to give us a sense of purpose while we're kind of bored at home for a while.
Yeah. What a good thing.
What a good thing. What good people all these people are.
Us too.
Nah, we haven't done much. We're trying to entertain people, though. Keep informed a little bit to the extent that we can. So anyway, thank you all for doing what you can to support us too. It's the end of the week and it's time to take out the trash. Honestly, if in lockdown conditions we can still have the garbage people intro, we're doing okay. How's it going, Brett?
It's going well. I'm pulling up my garbage person on my phone.
I've got my trash right here. I don't know if you have a can.
I'll just throw my phone in the garbage. Yeah. I'll delete it.
Would you like to go first?
Sure.
You want me to play this video or do you want to intro it first?
I'm going to intro it. Okay. I'm glad that we have it. Big ups to Marissa.
Thank you, Marissa.
Angel for getting it prepped for getting everything prepped in time, as well as Norma and the entire Damage Report crew. I think Cassie's editing. Okay, so Stephen Moore, you may notice this guy. You may remember this guy as the guy who's always on time for those of you who watched it ever with Bill Maher. He's the one, especially in times when Maher couldn't get any conservatives on the show. He's like this like giggly, terrible, annoying man. Here is his photo.
Yeah.
Stephen Moore went on a news show recently to really put in perspective just what a bad person he is and ask questions that people should not be thinking of, but you're afraid the capitalists the world over are really considering. Here he is.
We have programs. And
but what if people don't have any money? But Steve, what if people have no money? But what if people don't have any money? But Steve, what if people have no money to spend?
We have programs already for people, for example, who've lost their job, unemployment insurance. You know, I had dinner tonight with my 7th and 8th grade stepsons, and I asked them, what do you think about the idea of the government just giving $1,000 to everyone? And the first one said, well, why would anybody work if the government's going to give you free money? And the second one said, wouldn't that be inflationary? Now, if a 7th and 8th grader can figure that out, why can't members of Congress?
God, I'm still getting my kids to try to do their basic, basic math facts.
Well,
so
it's
that's
not complicated,
good.
Right? All economics right. is not yep. complicated.
I had not seen that, Brett. That was bad.
It was bad. You're talking about the economic damage that would be in the trillions of dollars. Is it worth the money?
Mm-hmm.
And I've already heard
the lives.
But that's the thing, is like it's not the last, and it's that thing that you're most afraid of. Are they valuing money over human life?
Yeah.
And the answer, even in the way he framed the question, even if it's just a question, is oh yeah, that's exactly what he's thinking.
Yeah.
So Stephen Moore, douchey extraordinaire.
You could delete the photo. How about that?
Delete the photo. I'm turning my ear off.
Yeah, I would say that, look, 7th and 8th graders, you know, being interested in this sort of stuff, knowing what inflation is, that's good, but we shouldn't necessarily respond to a pandemic based on their evaluation of the situation. Give it a couple more years. Okay, that was good. Mine is going to be very different. I saw this. This comes from Anna Kasparian's Twitter account. I saw that she had tweeted out this article. Did you see this? Titled, My Son Broke His Father's Spirit in a Wrestling Match. And so I'm going to read you a bit of this, but the garbage person is the father in this story. So
okay.
This is the person sending in a letter. My husband and teen son were the best of friends, getting along so well I sometimes felt like the third wheel in their close relationship. However, a recent incident fundamentally changed their dynamic and has put me in a difficult situation. Much of their bonding has resolved around being athletic, and my husband has always encouraged my son to become stronger. But then the moment finally came when my son was able to pin his dad. It was, of course, inevitable as my son got bigger and my husband aged, but I think it came a little too early for a man who always prided himself on his physical power. After that day, my husband became stern and even a bit cold with his son, making quite blunt statements about looking forward to the day he moves out. It's been quite a shock to my son, who has not connected the change in his dad's behavior to the incident in the backyard. He feels like he lost his best friend and instinctually blames himself. There's more to it, but that is enough that you, Dad, you go in the garbage. What is wrong with you? You produced something that could pin you. That's an accomplishment, not a failure.
And the mom, like, I'm not sure if my son is connected, but he will as soon as he reads this Daily Beast article.
Yeah, I think it might be Salon, but yeah, it's Slate. It's Slate, sorry.
This article in Slate. Oh my God. That
worst
is absolutely
dad bad. Ever. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.